Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
On Sunshine 106.8.
Houlihan. Into the penalty area.
A very good morning to you. I'm Reggie Corrigan and welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Well, we have a busy morning for you. We'll be talking to Ken shortly enough about the papers as always. In racing, we're going to be talking to Leon Blanche of Boyle Sports, of course, head of communications there, as he's going to preview this weekend's races and share with us his lucky 15. In GAA, Declan Drake will be in studio to look ahead to the Dublin versus Cork senior hurling quarter-final, which will also be joined on the line by two-time All-Ireland medalist from Cork, Seanan McCarthy, to have a chat about that. And in football, we've Alan Cawley of Cawley's Call to chat about the League of Ireland action and everything that's going on there. What a busy week it was for a lot of those clubs. And in rugby, after what's been a fairly tumultuous week in the world of rugby with plenty of Twitterati going on and games going back and forward, we're going to be talking to former Leinster and Ireland and British Lions Shane Byrne about the Lions tour and that great win last week, which I for one didn't expect them to get, but we're happy to see that they did. We're also going to be delighted right now by Will Downing to run through the Olympics and everything that's been going on so far. Will's a sports commentator and he's going to give us his insight. But before I go to Will, you can get in touch with us on the show by texting us on 087 11 55 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. And of course, don't forget, we're on Facebook, Dublin's Talking Sport, Twitter at Sport1068, and Instagram, Dublin's Talking Sport. So as I said, it's time to turn attention to the Olympics now, and I am delighted to be joined on the line by Will Downing. Good morning, Will. How are you?
Reggie, how are you doing? Good morning. Hi.
I'm very well, thanks indeed, and thank you for joining us in what is a very busy time sports-wise. I know you yourself have done plenty of work commentating on athletics and football and all sorts of various things, so no doubt, like myself, you're glued to the television at the moment, watching everything that's going on. Hasn't been a bad week for the Irish, getting gold medals.
Yeah, I mean, it's been very good. Kind of the build towards that has been going on for a good few years in Irish rowing and down in Skibbereen as well. But, I mean, we picked up a gold medal, which means when we get to the finish line tomorrow week, it'll have been a good game, basically, because we'll have won a medal. And obviously, you know, we've got Paul O'Donovan and Finn McCarthy having won in the lightweight double sculls, which was a terrific story, continuing on the story. The O'Donovan story, which started 5 years ago and has subsequently been world champion. You had the women's four picking up the bronze. So, I mean, the big work that's been going on in rowing is when you win a medal, it's sort of across all the sports, there's an absolutely brilliant lift. It's great for the country as well. We've not had a huge amount to cheer about for the last 18 months. So stuff like this is fantastic. And the fact that you hear all the reports of almost the entire country staying up a few mornings in a row until 2 a.m. to watch rowing, hey, that's quite something, I got to say. And I mean, we've been among the most successful nations in rowing as well. So, I mean, that's been a really positive lift.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, Skibbereen, I love all the jokes that are going on around Twitter and everything else about Skibbereen having, they're going to take over and put in an application for the next Olympics themselves. So that's all good. But I mean, I have to hand it to, it's probably been overshadowed a little bit, the bronze that Emily Hegarty, Fiona Murta, Emer Lam and Afrik Kyo getting bronze. They were the first there, but of course the two lads getting gold, that kind of overshadowed it a little bit, but it can't take away from the fact that they're the very first medal winners for women in rowing.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, it's the first ever rowing gold we've had as well from O'Donovan and McCarthy. But like, what it does is that it broadens the horizon a little bit. And I mean, with rowing for the last 5 years, it's kind of shown a lot of the public that, well, you know, if we can do it, then you can do it too. But I mean, especially by Afrik Kyo, Emer Lam, Fiona Murta, Emily Hegarty, and they've now shown, you know, to a huge transit of population in Ireland, well, look, come along. We've done this. It's, I mean, I hate to use the trite phrase, it'll be inspirational for girls watching on TV, but it absolutely is. Like, this is what the Olympic movement's been working towards, let's say, for the last 10, 15 years, and bringing a bit more parity, bringing in women's boxing, you know, introducing new elements in women's canoeing, having the mixed relays and athletics and swimming and triathlon. It's to get 50-50 in terms of the medals. And, you know, just to show that every medal in the Olympic Games, every competition, every athlete in the Olympics is precious. And, you know, previously, women's rowing in Ireland isn't something that would have been under a major spotlight, but it is now. And actually, probably it was really good when you think about it in hindsight, that for the women's four, that they got the medal first, so that they would have their, you know, their 24 hours where all the attention was on them.
Yeah.
Because obviously, you know, Paula Donovan, you remember his interviews from Rio, like, I've worked at four Olympic Games, so I'm not at this one, I suppose, for obvious circumstances. And like, Paula Donovan is a fantastic talker, so anytime he opens his mouth, that absolutely dominates. Obviously, he was in the boat with his brother Gary 5 years ago. He's now in with Vincent McCarthy, who was, you know, just a youngster when you think about it, 5 years ago when the last Olympics were in Rio.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you said, their box office, you know, both Gary and Paul when they're there, but Fintan now joining in on that as well, although I think he'll always be the quiet man in the background compared to the others. It didn't go quite so well last night for Mark English and Sarah Lavin. Both of those would have been finalist hopefuls, but Mark English bowed out in fourth in the heat of his 800 metres and Lavin, of course, in seventh in the heat of her 100 hurdles. So disappointment for those two athletes.
Yeah, and it actually does show when you come to this level, when you come to the Olympic Games, and I mean the World Championships is a case in point as well, there will be occasions when we'll be able to get lot qualified, but then the massive test is sort of when you're in the cauldron, when you are up against literally everybody else of the best in the world. Because if you go through to the previous night, or yesterday morning, your chief of clearing butler, Nadia Power, Louise Shanahan. Now, Nadia Power has been breaking loads of records over the past 12 months, indoors and outdoors. She's, you know, our fastest 800 metres runner ever. And, you know, we three very talented athletes, and they all finished seventh in the 800 metres. Mark English has won three European Championship medals and is, you know, a massive standard athlete. Sarah Lavin has been kind of on the comeback trail, if you like, the last couple of years, was very promising, an excellent junior, excellent underage athlete. Obviously, we had brilliant success in the European under-23s and the European juniors over the past couple of weeks in Tallinn, where a whole load of golds were won, which was absolutely magnificent. But those who succeed at the underage levels don't always make it into the adult grades. Lavin had had a few years of very bad luck with injury, but she'd come back. She qualified for the Olympics, which was a massive achievement in itself. And then you keep trying to achieve, trying to get out of the heat, go to the semi-final and so on. But it didn't happen for her, sadly, on this occasion. But, you know, the next World Championships are next year in Oregon. The next Olympics are only 3 years away. So if you have a stumble at these Olympic Games, at least it's a shorter cycle that everyone's going into now.
Yeah, it seems, Will, that athletics is almost the gold standard in terms of Olympics medal, excuse the pun, but you know what I mean? It's up there at such a level that other countries, the likes of the Americas, the Russias, the Chinas, the, you know, they pump so much of their Olympic budget into athletics. It almost feels like it's inevitable that those countries are always going to be at the top and that other countries can't kind of break through. And certainly for a small country like Ireland, and dare I say it, I mean, I know we've got the mixed four in the final, which is an amazing achievement. That in itself, I hate to think of us as also-rans, but getting to a final in that type of competition at that standard is a huge achievement in itself.
It is. And like, it's worth actually pointing out that mixed 4x4 relay, their final is coming up in a couple of hours' time. I think it's around 1:30 Irish time.
Yeah,
it's half past one. So, like, everybody will be in front of the TVs anyway. Sophie Becker, Phil Healy, Killian Green, Chris O'Donnell. And like, Phil Healy, again, outdoors, 100 and 200 metres, has been breaking a whole load of records lately. The outdoor Irish record holder over 100 and 200, and then Radoslav Adelecki, who's a brilliant underage athlete who had those successes in the European juniors a few weeks back has sort of been pushing her all the way and pushing closer to the Irish records. Now, she ultimately wasn't chosen for Tokyo. There was a bit of a debate about that. You see, what you say there, I think, is quite pertinent, because that's why, when it comes to something like the Olympic Games, I'm not interested in the medal table. I only care if we're on it, because, you know, the likes of the United States, you look at Britain, for example, who put $25 million into rowing and who only came out with one medal, and it wasn't a gold. So we've done better with a much smaller budget, a much tighter budget than they have. I mean, this is a debate. We could be here until Christmas literally talking about this. But when you've got the likes of, you know, the United States will be high up in the medal table, and China will be high up, and Britain will be high up. But that's because they spend a huge amount of money and they've got large populations. For us, it's about, you know, setting particular targets, which won't always be a medal. It may be a final, maybe a top eight position in terms of, you know, our some of our best athletes. Our best athletes will be earning 40,000 euros a year, and that's it. The next level down is around 20,000. Next level down is 12,000. And it's not a huge amount of money to be a full-time athlete. I've known dozens of athletes. It's going into hundreds now, who really, really talented athletes who ended up, you know, having to do part-time jobs. There was one in particular who was one of our best. I think she was a middle distance runner, was had to take a job in the family sweet shop, and she was delighted with it because she was on a grant of 5,000 euros, and she was delighted to get her grant of 5,000 euros as well. So that's why, you know, when Bermuda will win their first ever Olympics gold, as happened in the triathlon, it was Duffy, you know, a few nights ago, San Marino now in the shooting, they have won their first two Olympic medals of all time ever. Turkmenistan have won their first ever medal all time. Like, that's the sort of stuff which is interesting to me. I don't know how many other people it's interesting to, but it's interesting to me because, you know, there are so many countries getting on the medal table is the ultimate success, whereas Britain, I because somebody sent me the UK media guide last week, they're targeting 66 medals for it to be a successful Olympic Games for them. Now, if they win 60, they're high up in the medal table. Like, they'll have won massive stuff across the board. But for them, the Olympic Games would have been unsuccessful. But there's probably 150, 160 nations in the world where getting on the medal table is a success. And there's probably 180, 190 nations in the world where a gold medal in anything, one gold medal is the ultimate success. I think that kind of gets forgotten when, you know, that medal table flashes up and you just see the top 10 countries. It's great that Japan are having the best ever Olympic Games. Host nations tend to do very well. But, I mean, having been at four Olympic Games previously, the previous four, if the host nation is doing well, particularly if it's not a massive country, it gives a great lift. It gives a great boost to the overall competition and, you know, just to the overall atmosphere, the overall feeling. I know it's an unusual Olympic Games because, you know, we don't have crowds there. But when you've got full stadiums, when the home nation's doing well, it's brilliant. I worked at the 2006 World Cup when Germany, you know, were hopeful with their young team that they might go far, and they did go far. Because of that, round by round, game by game, the atmosphere in the nation just shot up and shot up and shot up. And may I say, unlike, you know, Euro 2020 a couple of weeks ago, when Germany were knocked out in the semi-final, the atmosphere was still buoyant, and it gave them a massive lift, a brilliant confidence. And in terms of football, then they had that generation reaching, you know, a semi-final of the next five or six tournaments. They ended up winning the World Cup. But it meant that, you know, there was a brilliant buy-in from the public. There was a massive boost, a massive lift. And, I mean, in terms of what we're seeing in Japan at the moment, like, Japan have won, I think, something like 17 or 18 gold medals. Yeah. That is going to have magnificent effects on so many different sports in Japan over the next 25 years, because we saw it with Australia for their Olympic Games in 2000, and they're still one of the best leading sporting nations in the world.
Absolutely, yeah, indeed. And yeah, I remember it well, the 2001. I was over in Australia just after that myself and got to tour around the stadium that they built. It was the biggest stadium in the world at the time. I think it held 110,000 people. They actually had to shrink it down to 80,000 to make it viable to use after the games were over. But the setup was incredible. And you're right, sport, which is already huge in Australia, grew even more over there. You mentioned the, let's call it the amateur ethos. I like to think of it as that, you know, those smaller nations winning things in, you know, anything from show jumping and dressage to shooting to archery. They're all the minority sports, and everybody gets their moment in the sun. And it always feels a little bit funny to me, and here we are in medal contention, it has to be said, in a sport like golf, where you've got Rory McIlroy and Lowry both just a couple of shots off the gold medal. And I feel weird about it. I mean, you know, if you were to count it in terms of medals, yes, absolutely. We've got a couple of guys going for gold medal and you'd wish them the very best and you'd hope that would be the case. But they have competitions that are so much bigger than the Olympics. It feels weird that they're in the Olympics to me.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And you're like, because I think you've only got two per nation who are competing in it, then like in terms of the United States, we'll say South Africa, you're not going to have all of the top names because you can only pick two per country. I mean, we're fortunate that we've been able, we've always had, or at least for the last 30 years, we've always had at least three or four really good players around at the same time. If you go back, you know, the previous generation that Harrington was in with Clark and McGinley, for example, now they would put their hands up to compete in Olympic Games. There's no doubt about that. For a country like us, I think it's a big honour. I would say if you're from, you know, the United States, like even though I think DeChambeau is competing, and so he is pretty much the name in golf at the moment. See, when they brought tennis in 1988, I think the big difference was it had the backing from all the top players, and all the top players wanted to play in the Olympic Games. So Federer will always play if he can, injury notwithstanding. Same with Andy Murray, who did absolutely everything he could. Basically, Andy Murray could retire. He could have retired a few weeks ago. He could have retired last year if he wanted to, but he wanted to play in the Olympic Games. It was important for him to be, you know, representing his country. He gave it what he could in the singles. Injury meant that he couldn't carry on in that, but he still wanted to play in the doubles because, you know, he wanted to win a medal for his country. He wanted to win a medal for his playing partner. I think in tennis, there was a buy-in immediately. Like, Steffi Graf won the first Olympic gold in 1988, then it was Capriati in 92, Lindsay Davenport. So you've always had major players who've wanted to play it, and you have the concept of the Golden Slam because you've only four Grand Slam tournaments in the year, and then the Olympics is kind of a bonus fifth every 4 years. And, you know, you've got other tournaments in the tennis circuit, but they're not quite the same. You can win Queens, that's lovely. You can win the Madrid Open, that's great. But, you know, it's not quite the same as, you know, winning, we'll say, the Byron Nelson, and you win €3 million. You saw Seamus Power winning on the US circuit last week, when, or a couple of weeks ago, while the Open Golf was on.
Yeah.
And, you know, even though a lot of the best players around weren't there, he still picked up a check for something like €1 million, and he's got his PGA Tour pass exemption for a few years. So, like, you've still got the four majors in golf, but then you've got a whole lot of support tournaments, which are massive, which pay huge prize money. When Justin Rose won the golf in Rio,
yeah,
it was one of the biggest highlights of his career. He said he wanted to play, you know, despite the fact that he's been, you know, he won the silver medal for the top amateur at the Open Championship back in the late 90s. He's won so many tour titles. Being a professional golfer and a successful one, he's won a huge amount of money. He wanted to play and he wanted to win. I think it'll be maybe another three or four Olympics before the general public, I think, really will take to golf. But I understand why the IOC did it, because it's the Olympic Games, it's their showpiece, it's the biggest showpiece of sport in the world. And you may have had a situation where some of the biggest sports people in the world weren't involved. So I think it's the reason why they brought tennis in. It's the reason why you had the dream team, the most incredible basketball team we'll ever see, that won the gold in Barcelona in 92 for the United States. I think it's the reason why you've got golf. It's the reason why you've got all of the best women's footballers in the world here, because the women's football tournament in the Olympics is just one tiny notch below the Women's World Cup, whereas the Men's World Cup and the Men's Olympic tournament are totally different. But in saying that, I was in the Maracanã when Neymar scored the winning penalty 5 years ago to win Brazil the Olympic football tournament. It was full, I think 100,000, that's it. It's essentially the under-23 World Cup. So it will feel strange to a lot of people that there are professional sports people in the Olympic Games. But from the IOC's point of view, if you've got the biggest sporting event in the world, then why not try and have
the biggest names.
Some of the biggest sports names in the world?
Yeah. Well, for a long, long time with the Olympics, you know, boxing was our go-to for medals, let's say. You know, we've had so many amazing champions, male and female, you know, over the years participating and medal hopes and everything else. And this year was no different. Aidan Walsh has guaranteed himself a bronze at this stage, but it hasn't quite captured the imagination this time around as it has in other Olympic Games, boxing.
Yeah, I think the thing is, you had that generation with the likes of, you know, Ken Egan, Paddy Barnes,
Connolly.
God rest him, Darren Sutherland as well, yeah. Who'd been there for a long time. And Carl Frampton was a really good amateur as well, and, you know, won EU titles, European titles and so on. And like they were able to keep that generation of athletes together for a long time. And then after two or three cycles, then maybe it was accelerated a bit when Billy Walsh departed the Irish scene and was picked up by the United States. Most of that generation then went professional, and Katie Taylor went professional, because I would say possibly Bernard Dunne and Andy Lee apart. You had a period maybe of 10 years, maybe 15 years, when the most famous Irish boxers were essentially all amateur. Now, that generation had pretty much all gone professional, so it's been left to, if you like, the next generation to come through. And I would say probably the long-lasting names that we've had in that have been in the women, like Kelly Harrington is... maybe arguably our best-known amateur boxer now.
Yeah.
I mean, she's got her quarterfinal coming up. If she beats Khalif, then she's guaranteed at least the bronze. Aidan Walsh has his semi-final coming up against Britain's Pat McCormick. So he's got, you know, at least the bronze. So we've got three medals there. Kurt Walker has his quarterfinal. So I think basically we haven't had a chance to see long-term what the current generation of amateur boxers do. Like, we had the European Games when there was a really good run for Walsh. It was a really good run for Kurt Walker. The World Championships too, depending where they are, if they're on in the middle of the night, it's just quite a status maybe where people aren't going to get up in the middle of the night to watch. But I'll tell you what, if we win a few medals in this, hey, the standard and the attention's going to shoot right up again, you know?
Absolutely.
So I will be wondering what we were talking about.
That's true. That's true. You must miss it, Will, the fact that you've been to so many Olympic Games at this stage and you're not there for this one, obvious reasons, COVID and everything else. You must miss the whole Olympic Village atmosphere, media frenzy and everything that goes around it.
Oh, I'll put it to you like this. I do and I don't. I mean, there'll be some nights I'll be watching it and I'll be truthful. I will feel completely stupid that it's going on and I'm not there. But I've loads of friends, particularly who are commentating on it and they're doing jobs for, let's say, the Olympic Broadcasting Services. And I normally work with those commentators and other teams that I know a lot of them and so on. And they really haven't enjoyed it because they went. They would have had to arrive about a week in advance. Then there was the quarantine rules.
Yeah.
Some had to spend 3 days in their room. Then you had the 14-day thing where basically you're only allowed your hotel room, the office, and one venue, your own venue, and that's it. And I know a lot of journalists who would have been working like me in a freelance capacity in that and just on the balance of things decided it would be better not to go. I mean, I work on a lot of European football. I'm now in my third week of working on the new European football season because a few leagues are going and a lot of that work is on site. So, I mean, when I'm working on that, like, obviously, I'm concentrating on that. There's a big part of me that would love to be there at the Olympic Games, but everybody who I know is over there has told me that it just doesn't have the atmosphere
imagine.
A normal Olympics. And they're finding themselves in an empty stadium where they're just directly having to look at the Olympic rings, at the Olympic logos, just to remind themselves that they're not at some practice match or something like that,
yeah.
That they actually are at the most important thing that matters. But the one good thing is that, you know, the likes of, will say, the gymnastics and the judo, for example, a lot of the competitors, you know, stay over because there are a lot of competitors in it. It's an indoor arena. They're allowed watch. The coaches are allowed watch. So you've got a crowd of maybe a few hundred in an indoor arena. So you actually get an atmosphere. So, like, it's been nice to watch the gymnastics and the judo and getting a bit of an atmosphere on it. But, I mean, it's strange. I've got the rugby sevens on the TV in front of me and I've watched a good bit of football as well.
Yeah.
And I'll be watching a huge amount of the athletics because athletics is one of my main sports and I'm a massive athletics fan. And it's just so weird to see an empty stadium and there's no atmosphere and you can hear what all the players are saying. And it's just really, really weird.
It is. It is. It's strange times, no doubt about it. Well, Will, listen, I really appreciate you coming on and giving us all that insight into everything that's going on at the Olympics at the moment. We'll chat again, hopefully. And you take care of yourself. Talk soon.
You too, Reggie. Absolute pleasure. Great being on with you and continued success with the show as well.
Thank you very much. That's Will Downing there, sports commentator and, as he said himself, freelance journalist on all things football and athletics. We're going to take a quick break now. When we come back, we'll be talking to Ken. Don't go away. 106.8. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. We're here every Saturday from 9 to 11 with all your sporting news. We'd love to hear from you. You can, of course, get us on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram, but you can text us on 087 11 55 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. Delighted to be joined on the line now by our own Ken Doherty. Morning, Ken.
Morning, Reg. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. Doing great. I've had a good week. It's been plenty busy with sport. Lots of Olympic stuff going on. What about the rowers? Yeah. Unbelievable result, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was fantastic. Absolutely delighted for them. And I loved the reception as well they got when they came back. And the Irish team lining up and clapping them home. Like, that was just fantastic.
Amazing.
I can imagine all the celebrations. I've seen some of them in Skibbereen. It was doing absolutely fantastic down there, you know.
Yeah, I heard them on the radio during the week. They went down to Skibbereen. I think Henry McKean or one of the reporters went down.
Yeah.
And they were saying it's not quite the same as it was, but when they get them home, they'll try and celebrate. So it's it's phenomenal achievement, gold medal. I mean, you know, it's just unreal. I mean, they've done so well in the past, but I mean, and of course the women's as well. They got the bronze in the boat, and they hadn't ever won a medal before. So two amazing achievements. Going Ireland is feeling pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. And when you look at Great Britain and how much they pump into their rowing team, you know, I think it's, you know, one of the most costly of all the Olympic sports. And, you know, Ireland has done so well in the past, as you said, but to get a gold medal at the Olympics and a bronze medal, it's just absolutely fantastic. You know, it's brilliant. I'm so happy for them. You know, they deserve everything. You know, working all, you know, 4 years. It's 4 years in the making as well, like, but... absolutely delighted.
I'm
great for Ireland as well, you know?
No, it really is. I was talking to Will Downing there, don't know if you heard or not, a commentator, about the Olympics and everything else. I just mentioned the fact to him that both Rory and Shane Lowry in great position to try and get a medal as well. They're like,
they are
three off the lead after round three.
Yeah, Rory's three off the lead and Shane just a shot behind, four off the lead. So, you know, they're well in hunt, you know, from a slow start, you would say. Like, they were only about 2 under after the first round, but they've really come good over the last couple of rounds, and now it's the final push. And anything can happen on that final round, you know. I know Schofield's on 14. Matsuyama, of course, the Masters champion, is only a shot behind. I mean, it'd be a lot of pressure on him in his home country to win the gold medal, but you can imagine the excitement there for him and the pressure, but he's doing tremendously well. But it'd be great to see Rory or Shane on the podium for sure. You know, they're well in there in the show, with the show, you know.
You know, we discussed this briefly last weekend, but I mean, the snooker, I mean, it doesn't seem to make sense now at all when you're watching the Olympics. There was a time when things like football and golf and, you know,
all the things
that weren't in it, tennis even, and basketball, that the criticism of the dream team being put in. It's starting to make no sense whatsoever now that snooker's not in it. The more I'm looking at the Olympics.
I know. They've been trying for years and years. And they did get in the Asian Games for a couple of times, which is, it was like the Olympic Games for all the Asian countries.
But what's the big block?
They just can't. I don't know. I think a lot of the countries themselves can pick a couple of wild cards. I mean, Japan picked softball this year because their ladies team is very, very strong in that department. And, you know, it's up to the country themselves for a couple of wild card picks, and I think that's the only way snooker can get in.
But can it not get in like the way the likes of BMX and skateboarding and all these?
Absolutely.
I mean, are they not pushing the IOC?
Oh no, they are. They've been pushing the IOC. They've been knocking on all the doors and trying to sort of, you know, break down barriers, as it were. They've been trying for years, Reggie, and it's just fallen on deaf ears, unfortunately. You know, I think. You know, it's going to take a long, long time. I mean, the first step would possibly be the Commonwealth Games. Maybe the Asian Games was a big step, but the Commonwealth Games maybe, and then the Olympics then after that. But, you know, I feel when you look at all these sports, I mean, how nice it would have been to be part of an Irish team there.
Absolutely.
You know, some
You'd
Olympics,
probably have to be the manager now at this stage, you know that, don't you?
No, I tell you what I'd be the water boy carrier, you know what I mean? I wouldn't mind being the water boy. Just to get there for the Olympic team would be just to sample the atmosphere. That would be fantastic. But no, I'd be... I'll be in a wheelchair or something like that by the time the Olympics go along, you know. But I'll be in a Zimmer's frame.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of water, boys, have you been watching? Have you been watching all of the controversy during the week with the Lions and Razzie Erasmus, the best paid water boy in the world? He's been putting all sorts of stuff out this week. You watched the match last week, did you? The Lions.
I watched the match. Yeah. Well, I went on your advice. I mean, you and Shane. I was listening to you. I was saying, how can the Lions beat this? South African team, world champions. How big they are, and they're on home turf and. Even the A team beat them the week before, and so I stayed in to South Africa.
I still don't know how they did
it. I know. I don't know about you, and I know you're going to discuss it from 10 onwards, but I just thought, I think it was the indiscipline in the scrum, wasn't it? Giving away so many penalties. I just thought the Lions played superbly well. I mean, their defence was brilliant. You know, I think they got a little bit lucky with the couple of tries that were. The knock-ons and stuff but I just thought they played great. They really did dominate the second half.
Well, I tell you one thing, it was the worst game of rugby I've watched for years, Ken. I can tell you that. It was horrific stuff.
I know, but it was exciting though, in a way. I mean, it wasn't for the purists, but it was still exciting, you know.
Yeah, no, look, there was decisions and bad decisions made. There's no question about it. The South Africans were cruising. Now they did run out of steam in the second half. There's no question about it. And the Lions' game plan was brilliant. They were very clever. They forced penalties out of South Africa, and they were much cuter. I'd say that about the Lions.
Absolutely.
Great credit to them for that. But there were decisions that were incorrect. There's no doubt about it. I'm going to talk about it with Shane a little bit later on. But the big thing during the week, I mean, and maybe he's done it on purpose, and it's to overshadow the fact that they didn't perform well, the South Africans, was Razzie Erasmus, and he's released a video, an hour-long video, picking out every single detail of what the referee got wrong and the officials got wrong,
and criticising
and everything else. And it's come in for a lot of chat and a lot of flack in rugby circles. Well, because, you know, some people are saying, look, it's sour grapes and it's, you know, bitter and just get on with it and you don't do that type of thing. And then other people are saying, well, there should be accountability. It's, you know, it's a top class game and everything else. So it's an odd one. It's a very odd one.
And is there any justification in the video? I mean, did you point out any stuff that he was correct, or is it just like, you know?
No, there is. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. There's things in it that they got wrong, and there's things that you can question from during the game. No question whatsoever about that. But whether or not there's a point in that being brought up again afterwards. Like, I mean, all of these coaches, I mean, Joe Schmidt did it for years and people probably weren't even aware of it. Joe Schmidt was doing analysis of referees' games and all of the matches that Ireland would have played in, whether they won or whether they lost. He was doing analysis and sending them to World Rugby. And that was for the betterment of the game and everything else. But they weren't being leaked out on Twitter and they weren't being put out under anonymous Twitter accounts and everything else.
He was
doing it for the good of the game, and also, you know, a very subtle way of letting the authorities know, and the referees all knew that Joe Schmidt was reviewing these games, so they knew that they had to be at the top of their
toes.
So it was a very positive thing that he was doing, you know, but this one doesn't feel that way. This one feels like it's a kind of a put it out there in the public and, you know, we got done basically, and that's what
Which, you know,
a lot of people are kind of saying, listen, you got beaten. Okay. Decisions didn't go your way.
Just get on with it.
Exactly. And now, of course, the captain Khaleesi has come out with some other things talking about being disrespected. And that adds another layer, another dimension to it. But look, all of that leads to what's going to be another incredible test at 5 o'clock today. I still think South Africa will come back. I think they'll have learned from their mistakes last week. I think they'll come back, and I fancy them to get a result. But I mean, I'm not going to go as bullish as I did last week, that's for sure.
I'll have to go quiz it again this afternoon.
I'll give you the tenner back. It's okay, don't worry.
£2.50.
Yeah, exactly. Each way, you know, and you.
Yeah.
So, any other crack from during the week? Anything else catch your attention?
Snooker was back on our calendar. We've been playing Championship League. And it's the first time we're back in the season. So it's great to be back playing again. And great to get through in the qualifying as well of the Championship League and winning the group and getting through to the second stage. So,
well done.
So, I think I'm surprised more than anybody else myself.
You were top of the table, were you? I finished
top, so I qualified for the last 32, which is take place in a couple of weeks' time. So, starts the 9th. Yeah, so looking forward to that. And then the British Open will be the first one. That'll be on ITV, and that starts on the 16th of August. Yeah, so, looking to get home for a few days next week and hopefully be in the studio with you besides it. It's been a while, you know, so, yeah, looking forward to it.
Good stuff. Okay, well, looking forward to getting you back next week. We'll have a good old chat then. Mind yourself for the rest of the week, and we'll be in touch shortly.
Enjoy the rugby.
No worries. Take care. Yeah. All the best.
Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye, Kate. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with me, Reggie Corrigan. With thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. You can get in touch with us on the show by texting us on 087 11 55 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. We will have Leon Blanche a little later in the show just to give us his lucky 15 for the racing for this weekend. But in the meantime, I want to welcome on the line Declan Drake. Morning, Declan. How are you?
Very good, Reg. Thank you very much. Yourself?
Yeah, very good. Yeah, just wanted to go straight to you and have a chat about League of Ireland. So, all going well. You were at the Rovers game last night.
Yes, indeed. The top of the table clash between Shamrock Rovers and St. Patrick's Athletic at Tallaght Stadium last night. And, you know, what is it, the 30th of July yesterday? It felt like the 30th of November at times up there last night with the monsoon-like conditions that we had. Only goal difference separating the two teams, of course, at the start of play. But at the end of the night, Shamrock Rovers, the champions, have moved 3 points clear at the top thanks to a fine 3-1 win against their Southside rivals.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, you got a chance to talk to Stephen Bradley after the game. Let's have a listen to that.
Yeah, always happy after a win, especially Dublin Derby and then top of the table clash. So, yeah, really happy. Against Tinsley Pats that want to come and have a go at you, we knew the press was high and we had to take that energy out and by moving them around and taking the legs off them. And we did that really well for the first 25 minutes. It might not look like there was a lot going on in the game, but for us it was exactly what we wanted, because we knew as the game went, spaces were open and we could hurt them. The game probably should have been over at half time. They score right on the kick at half time, so they're right back in the game. But second half again, obviously we get the two goals, but it could have been five in the end. Like, you know.
Could have been five in the end. Declan, I think, is that a fair reflection, you think?
I think so, Reg, absolutely. There was tremendous performances last night from Rovers, particularly Dylan Watts, who had a hand in all three goals, and then Danny Mandaru, who scored a brace as well. They got the first goal after 29 minutes. And, you know, Pat's right on the blow of half-time, drew level with a John Mountney free kick from about 25 yards out or so. So that might have changed the complexion of what Stephen Bradley was going to say to his team at half-time. But they came out in the second half. They got a second goal through Roberto Lopez, brilliant header from a corner, kick from Dylan Watts' delivery, and then the third goal, superb through ball from Watts into the path of Mandaru, and he made absolutely no mistake. So they were worthy winners on the night. There's very little doubt about that, I think. And that's a point, indeed, that Alan Matthews, the St. Patrick's Athletic manager, admitted afterwards as well.
Okay, well, let's have a listen to Alan when you caught up with him last night.
All credit to Shamrock Rovers, they played well. Our quality wasn't as good tonight as it had been the last couple of weeks. Key moments of the game, Rovers took advantage of that. We'll move on. As I say, it wasn't our best performance of late. We have been playing well and we've showed good quality throughout the pitch. Just tonight we lacked that, and Rovers took advantage of that and beat us. To deal with setbacks and you know, you're not going to have everything your own way. And very confident that the group that we have, good characters. Football is about trying to do as well as you can and win matches. And then when you don't win matches, showing that you have the character and the belief within the group to go and improve for the next game. And I firmly believe that the group has that resolve.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason why you shouldn't feel that way. It has been a fantastic season so far, no doubt. Bitterly disappointing for them last night, Declan, but I don't think there's any reason to press any panic buttons.
No, I don't think so, Reg. They've been excellent since they came back from the mid-season break, you know, and yeah, they'll be disappointed with the result last night, losing to their closest rivals like that. But as you say, there's great grounds for confidence in St. Pat's. They've got a really good squad there. They've added to it during the week, indeed, a Maltese international added to it as well. So, no, I would have no fears for them. They've a little bit of catching up to do on Rovers now, but they've been in this position before. So hopefully they can continue their quality season and push the hoops on in defence of their title.
Absolutely. We certainly hope that that's the case. It was a good result last night as well for Waterford to see. They got a 2-1 victory at Drogheda, and that despite being put down to 10 men.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, yeah. What is it called now? Heading the Space Park or something up on Drogheda. It's always United Park to me anyway, and the old-fashioned League of Ireland aficionados, you know. But regardless of what they call the place, it's still a tough place to go and get a result. And Waterford did really well last night and puts a little bit of a buffer between them and the two sides below them, Finn Harps and Longford Town. So yeah, I'm sure the trip back to Shoreside was a very pleasant one for the management and staff last night, all right, Jeff?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was a busy week during the week as well for domestic teams. In action in Europe.
Yeah, wonderful to see it. Both Dundalk and Bohemians advancing to the third qualifying round of the new Europa Conference League. And I think this league has been excellent for us and our league, Reg, to be honest with you, because nine times out of ten now you're playing teams of a similar level to you, you know, and you've got a great opportunity for advancement in the competition and the financial reward that that brings to the club game by game and round by round, and also of course the coefficient as well. And you know, we've got Bolt Rovers out in the third qualifying round next. I think it's next Thursday night at Talla Stadium. Bows are out on Tuesday night against Payak of Greece. Now that's an obvious step up in quality, but the European experience that Bows have had this season has been absolutely fantastic, and made even more special, of course, with the fans who missed out on the whole experience last season. So the Aviva is really rocking to 8,000 people at the moment, and it's fantastic for Bohemians, it's fantastic for Irish football, and as I say, well done to Dundalk on a great result in Tallinn the other night as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It was amazing. I think there were Bows tweeted out, I think the 8,000 tickets were gone in 16 minutes or something crazy like that.
Yeah, well, you look after your members and season ticket holders first, naturally, and then whatever is left on general sale. But there's such an appetite for football now at the moment, Reg, that people are just absolutely dying to get to a game. And the Aviva is a fantastic place to go and watch it, even if the Bows fans have to cross the river to come over there. But I don't think they mind that too much at the moment. They're really, really basking in their European success, which is fully deserved. They're playing some great football, and I'm sure Alan might talk a little bit more later on about it. But Georgie Kelly's in fantastic form, scored a couple of goals again the other night for the Gypsies. So yeah, upwards and onwards, and I'm sure everyone in Daily Mount is looking forward to their return trip to the Aviva next Tuesday.
Absolutely. Is it hard to keep things going on both fronts for squads like this? I mean, I know they'd be somewhat limited. Do you think would they be tending to focus on, say, right, okay, look, Europe is the one we really go after, or will they still focus on the domestic league?
No, I think you have to obviously focus on the domestic league, because that's what gets you into the competition for next season. You know, the higher that you can finish in the league. And Bowes played in Europe last week, and then they went to Cork. Okay, it was a non-league team, College Corinthians, no disrespect to them, but they went down Bowes and did a thoroughly professional job on them. The tendency might be to take your foot a little bit off the gas, perhaps, having been on the high of a European success and you're playing a non-league team. It's ultimately, of course, a very dangerous thing to do, but not that Keith Long would allow his players to do that, but it's always a possibility in the mentality. So you've got to keep it going on all fronts, and you know, for Keith Long, for Stephen Bradley, and indeed for Vinnie Perth at Dundalk, it's an excellent position to be in at the moment. That's exactly where they want to be from a footballing point of view.
Yeah, absolutely. And just finishing up on the domestic, you know, I know there's still plenty to go, but do you think Rovers will push on from here now? They've got that game in hand over Pats and that 4-3 point lead over them as well.
You'd have to say they're in pole position for it, all right. And they have the experience of doing it last year, albeit, you know, in a shortened season. But it doesn't matter whether it's 18 games or 36 games. You still have to produce the performances to get the results to win the league. So they obviously are, they're in pole position at the moment and would be fancied to do it again. And if you're asking me now on the last day of July in 2021, and I'm sure you might play this back in October if things don't work out this way, Reg, the kind of man that you are. That Rovers will probably kick on and win the league. They certainly should, but of course, football like life, there are no guarantees.
There certainly aren't, there's no doubt about it. Okay, Declan, we're going to be talking to you very shortly about all things GAA as well. So thanks for coming in and giving us that little update on everything going on in the domestic football. I'll chat to you very shortly.
Okay, Reg, talk to you soon.
Thanks very much, Declan Drake there, just filling us in on everything that was going on and that win last night for Rovers, 3-1 over Pats, a good performance from them. Okay, we will be getting the Lucky 15 from Leon Blanche and getting that up on our social media channels for you. Of course, Declan Drake will be back in studio very shortly to preview the Dublin-Cork match that we're all looking forward to, and we'll have Seanie McCarthy on to chat about that as well. And we'll have Alan Cawley talking football towards the end of the show, and Shane Byrne is going to be reviewing last week's game and looking forward to what's going to happen this week. We'll take news, don't go away. And you're very welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport, with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie, here every Saturday from 9 to 11 with all of your sporting news. You can text us on 087 11 55 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. Well, last week I certainly felt that the Lions were going to be up against it against the world champions in what was going to be a very tough encounter in South Africa. It turned out that they managed to find a way of getting victory over the South Africans in their own backyard. A result that I didn't see coming, but that Shane Byrne did, and I'm delighted that he's on the line here now to join me to discuss it again. Good morning, Shane. How are you?
Morning, Reggie. I don't want to gloat at all, but, you know, I did tell you how it happened.
You did, but I don't know how. I still don't know how it happened, but I'm delighted it happened because, you know, obviously I wanted the Lions to win, but I just couldn't work out how they were going to do that. And all indications early on in the game was that I was right and you were wrong, because at 12-3, the Lions hadn't fired a bullet. They looked like spent on their feet in many ways, and they just didn't look like a team that were going to be able to break down this physical, strong Springboks team, and then it all just went to pot in the second half.
Well, you see, the thing about this, and this is the worry for this weekend, is that the game in totality was all about South Africa. It was in the first half that they were in control of the game. They were physically outgunning the Lions. They were outplaying the Lions, and the first half was all about them. Amazing change in form in the second half, but the Lions, you got to give them credit there. But that was about South Africa's lack of international game time. As everyone knows who's been on the field in these things, is that international rugby, you have to be playing it regularly. You cannot just substitute it with a few games, training sessions. You basically, you're tired from the first minute and it's all just about keep going. And the South Africans ran out of steam. Fair play to the Lions. They manufactured a game plan in the second half, up the speed, and got it that it really stressed out the South Africans, and they just couldn't live with it. But they have that game under their belt now, and the whole thing is that dominance going to come out again in the first half, because it's going to last longer. And if they get that scoreboard moving better for them in the first half, it could be a big mountain to climb in the second.
And is a week enough time for them to get that level, do you think, for South Africa, would be enough time to fix the things that went wrong in that second half?
Well, it wasn't so much that things went wrong. It was just that when you get fatigued, your decision-making goes a little askew. Their kicking game went, and you would expect all of these things to be more focused, to be more accurate right out throughout the game. Yes, 1 week doesn't solve all problems. There's no doubt about that. But they will be better. They will be more focused. You see the changes that they've made in their team, is that they're going to come out and just be more physical. Look, South Africa, they're a wonderful team to play against. Favourite team I ever played against, because they are just all about standing toe-to-toe with them. And if you do that, you have a chance. But they are supremely confident in what they do. They will just keep at it and at it. And you can see that the Lions from the team that they've picked, they're almost batting down the hatches. They've picked a more steady team, a little bit more physical. Murray back in. You expect the kicking game to be very, very predominant in this game. And, you know, this is going to be an absolute all-out war of a game.
I must admit now, you know, for you and I watching the game, we could see maybe some of the intricacies of it. But for the, you know, maybe person who was just tuning in to watch a good game of rugby, it wasn't that. It was a rubbish game to me. All of the kicking was driving me mad. The one thing I didn't want to see was all that kicking. I was hoping to see some running rugby and a little bit of flair. Didn't see any of that last week. And I'm actually worried more now that it's going to be even more dire today from a Lions point of view, because certainly the changes lean towards exactly what you said. Just let's just keep putting up these bombs, see if they can catch it, and if they don't catch it, we'll just capitalise on that and, you know, benefit from their errors.
Unfortunately, I think you're dead right, Reggie. I think that is what's going to happen. I think you had a bit of hope when you saw Daly at 13 that there would be a bit of creativity from the Lions. Unfortunately, that didn't work. Mainly defensively, it didn't work. Daly got out physical right from the off, and that's gone now. But so I do think it's all going to be about tactics in this game. It's not going to be about flair, which is a shame. It's just almost going to be one of those games for rugby purists that you will see them really attacking each other physically, and that's the way it's going to go, because both sides seems to have gone with that kind of selection. And look, it is going to be an amazing contest. I think the game last week, you know, if you're looking for all that flair, wasn't great, but it was an amazingly tense game, an amazing turnaround, which had people raving about it. But look, I don't think you're going to see any amazing, you're not going to see tries of the century or anything like that in this game. You know, it's just really going to be a massive, massive physical contest.
Well, for the Lions, Shane, right, you know, we're talking about, there was a succession of penalties there, I think, that were going in every 3 or 4 minutes for about 6 penalties in that second half, which basically was how the Lions scored. That's how they got themselves into the game and won the game. Now, the first and most important thing that the South Africans are going to do this week, if they have any brain cells at all, is not give away a penalty. And by that I mean they'll probably let the Lions have the ball, because there's no threat coming from the Lions when they have the ball with their backline and with the way that they run. So any coach worth his salt working for South Africa will just turn around, let them have the ball, we'll tackle them all day long, we'll drive them back off it, just let them have the ball, and eventually they'll kick it back for us. And if we can fix our aerial game and catch those balls and run back at them, well then we'll be in the position of power. So is it all about discipline, you think, if you're a South African coach, and just don't afford the Lions a chance to get on the scoreboard?
Yeah, it's not quite as simple as that. Yeah, I do agree with what you're saying. Is the discipline is obviously going to be some massive, massive thing that they have to address. The kicking game, if you just give them the ball, there is an attacking part of the kicking game as well. If the Lions are kicking right and correctly, they force you into mistakes. Like, it's not just that the area battle can be cleaned up and everything. If those kicks are very, very accurate, the pressure is going to be there. They can't rely on just sitting back and waiting for that to happen. It is part of what you're saying, I do believe is right, is that, you know, they marched up the field, the Lions did, you know, through ill discipline in South Africa, but that's part of fatigue. You know yourself as that when you're absolutely out in your feet, you start to make errors, you start to do ill-disciplined things. That little nanosecond of staying on your feet as opposed to collapsing into the ruck, little things like that make a huge difference. And that's where I think South Africa will be better and more disciplined. I don't think the Lions can win this game just meeting them toe-to-toe. I think they're going to have to come up with something. They're going to have to show some sort of want to get the ball out wide, to move the South Africans around. I don't think purely the kicking game, I think it's going to feature massively, but I don't think purely the kicking game will see them through, because all the things you're saying, yeah, correct. But it's not enough to win a second series, our second test in the series, because the South Africans know that this is absolutely enormous. I think, well, what are we back to, 74? The last time this would have happened. And, you know, they are not going to let that happen very easily. It's going to take a titanic effort from the Lions, and kicking won't do it by itself.
Well, you know, from an Irish point of view, with our green hats on, we're delighted to see Murray getting in. But there's a big but. I don't understand why Murray has gotten in. If they pick Price, and, you know, by all accounts, he had a good game last week. He did what he was put there to do. They won the game, essentially. And I know Murray came on towards the latter stages, and you could say that he steadied the ship or whatever. Why has this change been made, do you think? What's that about?
I'll tell you. I'll tell you.
Good.
Impact off the bench.
Yeah.
That's what it is. He's lost out in his test series, or his test start, because he'll be better than Murray off the bench. That it's the increase of pace, all the talent things, all the things he's good at, all the you know, the skills that he has that got him selected on the starting the first test are the reasons why he's on the bench. This one is because he will have more of an impact. Obviously, the Lions are playing at the opposite. You say Murray came off the bench and batting down the hatches. I honestly think they're almost going to be batting down the hatches at the start with the way they're going to play.
But it could be too late with the bench. You know, I mean, look at last week.
That's the risk.
Behind.
That's the risk. But like, if you're chasing a game, I'd prefer to have Ali Price coming off the bench than Conor Murray.
Yeah.
You know, he would be far more effective. You know, that little half second that he would give, you know, speed wise to the ball, getting it distributed, that is exactly the reason why he's on the bench.
Right.
And
I'd prefer to get a little bit of an edge in front and try and hold on to it than go chasing a lead, you know.
Well, listen, I agree, but that just isn't the tale that the selections is telling, because you said it right. Ali Price didn't do anything wrong. In fact, he played well.
Yeah.
You know, so there has to be a reason for it, you know. And you know, if Ali Price's big plus over Conor Murray is his speed and accuracy, well, then, you know, that obviously means that they're not looking for that to start the game. They're looking for a different, they're looking for a tactical game and a more mature, sensible game. That's what Conor Murray brings you. And we all know, look, the last Lions, he was the best scrum half in the world, and he's still on his form. He's absolutely incredible at controlling a game. Be under no illusions. The pressure's on him. You know, he getting that start in this game is putting a heap of pressure on Conor because he needs to play very, very well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a strange week, hasn't it? You know, we're kind of, and I don't know, has Razzie Rasmus done this on purpose? We've kind of gone away from talking about how badly the South Africans blew up in the second half and how much they ran out of steam and all of the various different things. It turned into a bit of a circus at the beginning of the week with, you know, dummy accounts being accusations going around about that. But then this hour-long video, I mean, this is unheard of. I was telling our listeners earlier on that, you know, I know for from well within the camp that it's been said to me that, you know, Joe Schmidt, when he was in charge, often and probably always did reviews of every single game that they were in, whether they won or they didn't win. And he sent that video to World Rugby with, you know, recommendations and insight and things as he would see it as a coach. Perfectly entitled to do. And that's all for the betterment of the game and as a positive thing that would help the officials. Okay. But it was always private, and it was always, you know, it didn't leak out in the media, and people didn't even really know about it. But it definitely would have brought and advanced the game forward. This, on the other hand, is a direct criticism of the officials, breaking it down to the finest of details and calling out match officials in a way that's never been done in rugby before. It's a very, very strange route to go down for a director of rugby.
Yeah, there's a couple of things on this. I think that this was meant to be a swipe at World Rugby, and it misfired. With the length of time it went on, criticising Nick Berry, I think that was incorrect. Rugby's based on something, you know, called respect for the referee, and you know, that's they can make incorrect decisions. There's no doubt about it, but that's the way it goes. It's meant to flow from for both sides. All we want from the refs is that the rules are followed and that they keep us safe on the pitch. But I think Razzie was dead right in what he said at the first 20 minutes of it. He was talking about world rugby and the amount of time it took to get feedback from the game. And, you know, Tuesday of a test match is way too late to take any feedback. Like, it has to be in from a Sunday. Mm. And that's, you know, the accountability has to be there for the refs. Like, that's one of the things that needs to be there. And you don't know if they got accountability unless you get feedback. So he was 100% correct, I believe, in what he was saying in that respect.
Yeah.
It was just, he then went on for 45 more minutes in critiquing the referee, which was wrong.
Yeah.
He shouldn't have done that. That was just absolutely wrong. You're right. It's not that he can't have sent it. It's just that that's behind closed doors. That's the way that should be done. People don't need to see that. You know, supporters don't need to see that. Young players don't need to see that. That they're able to question the referee, you know, because that's the foundation that our game is built on is respect for the referee. And he was completely incorrect in what he did in that respect.
Like, if you look at Gatland, Gatland's a master at this, because what Gatland did before the test was he threw out all these doubts and question marks, and he got the rest of the coaches to do it as well about, oh, how could you not have a plan B when they had to go with the fourth official who was a South African, and it's not right and it's not fair. And I'm 100% convinced that the decisions made by that fourth official were influenced by the fact that there was a big, huge media pressure being put on the fact that, you know, the focus is on, you can't be biased here. You cannot be seen to give any other decision. I mean, for example, the tip tackle was a definite minimum yellow card and could easily have been red. And, you know, the try...
In front of the kicker,
You know, there wasn't enough evidence there for me to say that it wasn't a try, but they didn't give the decision. And even the referee's wording of it was, you know, is there any reason why I can't, basically? And then he said, no, you can't. There's no reason, but don't give the try anyway.
Yeah.
It was really weird.
Yeah.
So Gatland won the battle there.
Oh, no doubt. But that's all the mind games. Like, they're only human. You know, they are only human. Like, yes, they have amazing amounts of technology, et cetera, to back them up now. And I think that's half the problem. You know, just a small critique of it is that I think there's a little bit too much of that. I think that they're almost hiding behind the technology now, you know, whereas sometimes just a clear decision on the pitch, you know, and move on with it rather than watching every single angle. And, you know, it should be when it shows something right, okay, let's move on. But Gatland plays that mind game superbly. We all know that. He's done it day in, day out, you know, for years and years. And it's just, I think Razzie got this one wrong. I think he started off with the right idea and it just went into something that it shouldn't have been. Because World Rugby are wrong. The referees do need to be accountable for what they do. They do need to communicate with the teams a lot earlier. It's not just up to them. They have to partake in what they're doing.
Mm.
And he got that point across, but then you don't just go out and slate a referee for at best 50-50 decisions.
I know, especially when there's other people there in the background who can help him out and maybe didn't step up to help with those decisions. Yeah, I hear you. What about the backlash from South Africa today? Finally, it's going to be huge, I imagine. World champions let themselves down a bit last week. Few changes being made. What way do you see it going?
Thanks.
I listened to you this week.
Well, to be honest with you, you know, I wouldn't go against the Lions because it is going to happen again. Yeah, you're dead right. 1 week isn't enough to get yourself completely up to speed in all the things that are needed for top-class international rugby. 1 week's not enough. So there will be a dip from the South Africans into the second half. I wouldn't go against the Lions being able to capitalise on that as long as they can stay in the game for that length of time, hence the Conor Murray, hence the reason that he's starting, etc., etc.
Yeah.
But there's a sneaky little bit of me would for, you know, thinks that South Africa are going to be very, very strong. They're a very, very proud, talented team. And you would think that, you know, because of what's on the line, that, you know, they are going to pip this. They will manage to keep it going because you got to think of one thing already. If the South Africans do manage to win this game, what a third test it would be. It would be absolutely incredible to see that happen. So don't tell anybody now. I kind of sneakily would like to see that happen. I'm not going to go against the Lions because I do think South Africa will dip. I think that will happen, and they pick the team to make sure they're in the right position at that time to capitalize on that. But wouldn't it just make for an unbelievable weekend next weekend if they go into it 1-1?
Well, I'm calling that one. I think it's going to be a victory for South Africa. I got it wrong last week. I just think they'll have to bounce back this week. I think their discipline will be better. And I think they will have learned from last week. And I think we could be in for a very, very juicy third decider. But I don't mind being wrong. I'll tell you that. I don't mind if it's 2-0 after that.
Correct.
All right, listen, we'll chat to you next week about it before that test. And in the meantime, thanks so much for this morning. We'll chat to you again soon.
No worries, Reg. Take care.
Take care. That's Shane Byrne there. Leinster, Ireland, and of course, British Lion, giving his thoughts. He thinks the Lions will just squeeze it, but it could go either way. I think South Africa will bounce back and get a result, but I was wrong last week. We'll see if I'm going to be wrong again this week. In the meantime, we're going to take a break now, but when I come back, I'll be talking to Declan Drake about all things GAA. Don't go away. 106.8. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. You can get us on 087 11 55 777 should you wish to text the show and give us any of your opinions. Delighted to be joined in studio now by Declan Drake to chat GAA. Good morning, Dec. How are you?
Very good, Reg. Thank you. Looking forward to my trip to Tom Semple's field later this evening.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a cracking weekend in store for us, no question about it. I'm delighted also to be joined on the line by Seanie McCarthy, their Cork legend. Good morning, Seanie. How are you?
Good morning, Declan. How are you?
It's Reggie here. Declan's here beside me.
Oh, Reggie, sorry. Yeah.
Reggie. No bother at all. Great.
I was going to say hello to the GM at first.
Absolutely. It was great to have you on anyway. It's an exciting weekend, no question about it. Are you feeling confident?
Look, I suppose confident, no. Hopeful, yes. We've been kind of trudging our way through the championship without any great major performance. Each game we're getting a little bit better, but I think there's a huge task in front of Cork again today, playing Dublin. Dublin are a very big physical team, and I think we really have to bring our A game. We're getting down to the business end of the season and everyone sees the prize at the end of it is a trip to Croke Park in 3 weeks' time. So I think going to be I think it's a great weekend for sport, and it's going to be a great weekend for GAA.
Yeah, like all my friends from the rugby circles down around Cork, you're as guarded as they are in your answer, no doubt about it. Never let them think that you're in any way cocky, isn't that right, Seanie?
I think we're realistic people.
Absolutely, no question.
A bit of realism.
Yeah. Well, I saw last week in the great tradition of goalkeepers from that neck of the woods in Pat Collins, a Balnahassie club mate of your own, making that brilliant save to pretty much save the championship. So I suppose there'll be a little bit of a feeling of fortune to be in the position that you're in from that.
Absolutely. I was delighted for Patrick and his family. Mm-hmm. I suppose it's a unique thing. I suppose we're delighted in our club. It's a country club. And his brother is the sub-keeper. And previous to that, we had Martin Coleman, who was the sub-keeper to Anthony Nash for years. And then we had Martin Coleman's father, who was... So it is a succession of goalkeepers have come and represented Cork down through the years. But I suppose Patrick took over. He took over a big mantle from Anthony Nash. Mm. Had done well. Had come up, played minor and under 21 with Cork, but I think he really became of age last weekend with those two fantastic saves. And you have to face it. He kept Cork in the championship. Yeah. That save from Tony Kelly at the end was absolutely tremendous. It was do or die. He came. He put his body in the line. He came out full frontal charge, spread himself wide, and made the save. But got a fantastic family, and he's a fantastic young player, and he deserves everything that is happening to him at the moment.
Absolutely, echo that, Seanie. I know you're being, we're having a bit of crack about it, and the Dublin match. But in some ways, I suppose there will be. You mentioned there that the Cork the team are starting to grow into this championship a little bit. With that in mind, there probably is a little bit of a feeling amongst Cork people that they're happier that it is Dublin and maybe not Tipp that they got, because it could have gone that way.
Yeah, I suppose, absolutely. I suppose it's always better to play a team that you don't play too often. I think there's a familiarity about playing Tipp and there's a familiarity playing Limerick, because I suppose they're Munster teams and we've met them down through the years in the Munster Hurling Championship. And I think last time we played Dublin was 2014 in the All-Ireland semi-final. So Dublin are a bit like ourselves. They're building a team and they're growing, and each year they're improving, and Matty's done a great job with them. And it's a novelty to play someone outside of Munster rather than our Tipperary's and Limerick's and Clare's, you know. So yeah, I'm very, very happy that we've drawn Dublin, not because I think we can beat them easy, but it's just the fact that they're a different opponent and they're a different opposition. They're going to prove a different challenge, and I think hopefully we'll be up to it for it today, you know.
Seanie, good morning to you. It's Declan here.
Yeah, how are you?
Did you forget you beat us last year in the championship? No, down in Thurles. Did you forget that?
Last year was COVID. We all blanked out last year.
That's it, Sean. Looking at it from a Dublin team perspective, they had their issues pre the Kilkenny match. They lost four fellas through COVID. Two starters in Keane O'Callaghan and Ronan Hayes, both who are back in the team this evening, and two substitutes as well. They're going to need their full complement, because I think Cork bring a certain growing confidence as this championship progresses, and Dublin still might have some little doubts about themselves going into the game after the Kilkenny defeat.
Yeah, I probably agree with you there, Declan. I think Dublin, in their progression, in their cycle of progressing, are probably maybe a year or two behind Cork. But we're still learning a lot. I agree 100%. I think Dublin weren't given credit for the game they put to Kilkenny in the Leinster final. They were without two starters, four players missing, up to the 62nd minute, until TJ Reid got the penalty and scored a goal. They were in with a shout. They beat Galway. So Dublin are no easy team, and as I said, from now on you're in the business end of the season. You're going to get no soft game from anyone. So I think they're very similar in their progression, but we're probably slightly ahead, that we've a little bit more probably maturity in playing the bigger games.
I know we're going to talk a little bit about Joe Canning's retirement a little bit later, but I wanted to talk to you about another man who is still, unfortunately, at this point, a member of an elite club, and that's Patrick Horgan, one of the greatest hurlers never to have won an All-Ireland medal yet, I say. There's always big expectation, Hoggy, when he plays for Cork, but the role of free-taking tonight is going to be so crucial to both teams, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, there's an old saying, and I agree with, and especially in county level, you can carry a free taker, because they're in most games they're worth anything from 5 to 10 points now. Huggy's been a fantastic servant and still is a fantastic servant to Cork Hurling, on and off the field. He's exemplary in how he behaves himself, how he carries himself. He's fantastic talking to the younger people. He's fantastic with the younger players. His skill, his ability. The great thing I'm finding at the moment is there's, we were too reliant on him the last probably 3, 4, 5 years. The weight of expectation has been taken off his shoulders a little bit now, and has been spread out amongst the other forwards, with the likes of Jack O'Connor, young Cahalan, Conor Cahalan coming and starting today. I think that's great. We need that. There's no one player can carry any team. And I think Cork are beginning to spread that weight now across a number of players. But free-taking is an essential part of today's game. You have to be converting. You see players can score frees now from in their own half, in their own 65-45. So it's a free shot, and you need to capitalise on 90-95% of them in the inter-county games in today's game.
Cork, as we know, had a great victory over Clare last week, which we've spoken about, and Dublin didn't play last week. They had the week off, which was probably fortunate to allow them to get their issues sorted out off the park.
Yeah.
How much of a factor could that be tonight? Because last week would have taken an awful lot out of that Cork team against Clare.
Huge. You can look at it two ways. I agree. I think for a team that's building and building in confidence as well, they'd like to roll over week on week. If you can stay injury free, it probably suits Cork to be coming out, because there's momentum behind them and they have played games at pace and championship pace. The only thing I'd be worried about is tiredness and fatigue, because the heat and the sunshine and the heat and the temperatures last weekend were incredible. And what that would take out of any team. you will need at least a week to recover. Where, as you said, Dublin probably needed it to get over, to get themselves back and get the players back fit that were out missing the last day. Yeah, so it probably suited them. The way it's falling, it's suiting both teams. For me personally, if I was a player and I'm on a roll at the moment on a winning streak, I'd prefer to be playing week after week and just have a little kind of a fuck around during the week and a relaxation session, nothing too heavy, and then you're up for championship again. It's got to come. It's got to finish very fast, Declan. It's like, as I said, it's 3 weeks away, and you're in an All-Ireland final. I think the players will realise that now, and they're going to be giving it all for the next 3 weeks. You know.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. It certainly is mouthwatering how much is coming down the line with all of these matches. Of course, during the week, Declan mentioned there as well, the great Joe Canning deciding to give it a rest and hang up the boots. No doubt, like everybody else, you were in awe of what he achieved over the years and how fantastic a player he was.
Ah, oh, Reggie, look, Joe's the modern day hero for the young people. I met him a couple of years ago above at the ploughing championship selling his hurleys, and like, he's a very shy player, very shy person, but the guy, like, he was a one man machine for Galway down to years. Like, Joe's scoring in each game would beat most teams that they played alone in a cumulative score.
Yeah.
Sideline balls, dead balls, frees, his physicality brought to the game, his professionalism, his will to win. I can't say much more, like, but he was an absolutely fantastic. It's hurling's loss, Joe retiring. That's all I can say. He's after some. I personally don't know how he kept going. Some of the injuries he picked up through the years. Joe never did anything. Never did any injury easy. It was always something very, very serious.
Traffic,
and he managed to rehab and come back and put in a performance again. And I saw him chasing around the field last Saturday as if he was a young fella again. And same appetite for the game as he had 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Look, he's a fantastic player, and he'll be held in high esteem for the rest of his life and what he's achieved and what he's done for the GAA.
It's really sad to see him go, obviously, Shawnee, but with only one All-Ireland medal as well. And it's not his fault entirely, of course. It's just the way it is in Galway. But at least he retires with a Celtic cross, and you have one or two of them yourself, of course.
Yeah. I suppose they don't come easy, Declan. I won one in 86, won one in 90, last one in 92. And you don't. It's only as you get older, and I suppose Reggie can support me in this, as you get older, you appreciate
thanks,
what
cheers,
you've
thanks,
achieved.
Because
as you get older, you appreciate what you achieve. And how hard I remember, actually, in 1990, I'll tell you a short story. We came back from the All-Ireland, and it's tradition in Cork to go up to the captain's club on the Monday night after coming back, and we went up to the Glen Club where Tomás Mackay was our captain, and the person caught me and he said, come over here, I want to introduce you to someone. And I went over, and it was Jack Lynch, the famous politician and Cork hurler.
Yeah.
And Jack was a very softly spoken man, and he said I'd been down to say hello, thank you, and shake hands with him. And he just said to me, whispered into my ear, he said remember, young man, he said you've got something that a lot of people haven't. He said, appreciate what you have. And to this day, I remember that. He softly just whispered into my ear. He said, remember, young man, he said, you've something that a lot of people would love to have. They're hard to come by. You just mentioned, Dick mentioned earlier about Patrick Horgan. Patrick hasn't got one, has given his life and blood and heart and soul to Cork hurling. Mm. So I'd say that many players could name a dozen players that never won an All-Ireland medal, so they're precious.
They
when you
sure
win
are,
them, they're very, very precious.
Yeah,
you
no
know.
Question about
will
that.
He be back next year for another go at it? If he doesn't go this year, after tonight, Sean.
When Dublin beat us tonight, I suppose, yeah, he'll lick his wounds and think about it. But I think Patrick has another year to lift him, Patrick, and I think he'll be. Outside of his influence on the field, it's his influence to the younger players coming through. And you can see with our under-17s and 20, we need the likes of the season campaigners, as we call them, the older guys, to bring through these younger guys and give them the confidence to go out and hurl at their will and hurl at their best. And Patrick is a guy that can do that in the dressing room. He's a fantastic on and off field.
Well, it's going to be a really, really fantastic match tonight. I'm looking forward to it. It'll be a cracking affair. Two teams that are both on good form, and yeah, it'll be one to watch. Shawnee, it's been a pleasure chatting to you. I'd love to talk to you again. We'll see what happens week if you get the victory. We might have to talk to you again, but if you do, we mightn't talk to you for a while either. That's
yeah, yeah. I get used to that already.
No offense, Shawnee, but I'm hoping talking to you next year.
take care, Shawnee.
I think that half your jersey is red too.
Yeah, well, that's true. I can't do it either way. That's true, yeah.
All right, Shawnee, take care. All the best.
Thanks, lads, and have a good weekend.
Thanks, Sean. Take care.
Take care. That's Sean McCarthy there, of course, winner of All Ireland's in 86 and 90. The great wing back from Ballinahassig, chatting to us there about that match. And, of course, he's leaning towards Cork, although he would never say that publicly. We got to quickly get on to Sunday as well. Of course, it's the final, and we got Kildare, Dubs, obvious favourites for the game, but probably won't have it all their own way.
I think if we were on camcorder, or whatever they call it these days, they'd see you with a white top on you in here this morning. I don't know if that's deliberate or not, but yeah, Leinster final day again, Reg, tomorrow. Looking forward to it. The challenge of Kildare looking for an 11th consecutive title and step 3-5 and all that kind of thing. Going to need overall a more consistent performance than we produced against Meath the last day. Very strong, very cohesive in the first half, got the two goals early on. Not so good in the second half, as Desi Farrell mentioned after the game. Jack O'Connor's done tremendous work with Kildare. They're an improving team. Their under-20s won the All-Ireland a couple of years ago. They're back in Division 1 of the Allianz National Football League next year. They're in a Leinster final, so serious progress down there under him. He'll have a good game plan for Dublin tomorrow, but I don't think his team will have enough for us, and would expect us to be looking forward to an All-Ireland semi-final, please God, against some team called Mayo that Jane McNamara might be familiar with.
Yeah, that's it. Another epic encounter with the Mayo lads to send them home again.
Hopefully. Let's not get beyond ourselves for tomorrow yet.
That's true. Okay, we're going to take a break now. When we come back, we're going to be talking football with Alan Cawley and Declan. Don't go away. Welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport, with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Now, I'm just going to give you a quick lucky 15 because we missed it earlier on. Dave Weldon of the Racing Hour podcast has sent in his lucky 15, so we put them up on social media for you to look at as well. 2 o'clock in Galway, high altitude, 5-1 shot. 2:35 in Galway, Alpine Sierra, 8-1. The 3:48 in Galway, Barood, 9-4. And in the 4:20 in Galway, Crowns Major, that's a 13-2 shot. But as I said, for all you racing fans, we'll put that up on our social media channels as well. Football now, delighted to be joined by Alan Cawley. Good morning, Al, how are you?
Morning, Reggie, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks, very well indeed. Yeah, it's been a really good week, I have to say, football-wise. Last night, Rovers getting the result 3-1 against Pats in that top-of-the-table clash. Declan caught up with Stephen Bradley earlier on. Let's just have a quick listen to that.
Yeah, always happy after a win, especially Dublin Derby and then top-of-the-table clash. So, yeah, really happy. Against teams like Pats that want to come and have a go at you, we knew they'd press us high, and we had to take that energy out of them by moving them around and taking the legs off them. We did that really well for the first 25 minutes. It might not look like there was a lot going on in the game, but for us it was exactly what we wanted, because we knew as the game went, spaces were open and we could hurt them. The game probably should have been over at half time. They score right on the kick at half time, so they're right back in the game. But second half again, obviously we get the two goals, but it could have been five in the end. Like, you know.
It was a huge result for them, Alan. You know, 3 points clear now with a game in hand over Pats. They were very convincing in that victory, I suppose, is the way to put it.
Yeah, it was a big result, Reggie. I was at the game and they were comfortable throughout, to be fair to them. I wouldn't always agree with Stephen Bradley's assessments after the match, but I would totally agree with that one, to be fair. They were in total control in the first half. It looked like they probably Mandra missed a great chance after he scored a lovely goal to go 2-0 up from a header, and it looked like they were coasting really going into half time, but then St. Pat got a very soft goal from a free kick, looked like it took a deflection and just went by Manus, and it looked like then it won all at half time. You're thinking we might be set up for a big second half, but to be fair to Shamrock Rovers, they picked up where they left off in the second half as well, and they were totally dominant, totally in control. The game opened up a little bit after it went 2-1 up, but to me, once it opened up, it always felt like Rovers were going to go on and maybe score 3 or 4, and that's exactly what transpired, because once the gaps opened, obviously Mandra out a threat to have. Dylan Watts was playing some lovely passes and he set up the two goals. Richie Towell has added so much to the team as well since he's come in. And I just think, to be fair to St. Pat's, Reggie, the better team won on the night, Shamrock Rovers, and St. Pat's are probably punching above their weight to be in the title challenge at the moment. Yeah. I would have said at the start of the season for them to qualify for Europe would have been a great achievement at the start. I never had them down as title contenders. Hopefully they can just hang in the race, but it's looking ominous for the rest of the teams, because since that performance against Slovan Bratislava in the second leg, I think Shamrock Rovers will kick on from here now and start to open up a gap on the other teams.
Speaking of Europe, it's been a great week. I know you were at the Bowes game during the week. This Europa Conference League, I mean, some people have been critical of these types of competitions and the number of teams in it and all that kind of stuff. But what do you make of it? Has it been of great benefit to Irish football?
Oh, massively, Reggie. I think it's absolutely fantastic because you're playing against teams of a similar standard to yourselves now, which gives them all a chance. Like, when you would have think over the years, the teams that we would have had to play against just to qualify maybe through a couple of rounds, or if you were lucky enough to ever get to a group stage, which happened so rare, obviously, when you go back to Dundalk in 2016, which was a monumental achievement, really. But at least with this competition now, it gives all our teams a chance to maybe get into a group stage. Now, you're still coming up against some stiff competition. I was looking at some of the teams that Dundalk could potentially play if they come through the Vitesse Arnhem game. But that in itself is a difficult tie. The Dutch team, obviously, next week for Dundalk. Also, you have Pauk from Greece, who've been in 8 out of the 11 last Europa League group stages. So even though the first early rounds you're playing against teams from the likes of Andorra, Iceland, wherever the case may be, and they'd be looking at our league in a similar way as the way we're looking at them, Reggie. Let's be honest about that, you know. So you're playing against teams of a similar standard, similar abilities, and I think it's a great opportunity for our teams. And to see 3 of them now in the third qualifying round, I think it's absolutely fantastic. But the huge bonus on top of that, Reggie, not only is the fact that it gives the teams an opportunity, but the financial reward is the exact same as what it would be if you were playing against teams that we played in the proper Europa League last year or the Champions League. So there's huge financial reward, which Bohemians have obviously capitalised on so far, getting through to rounds, Dundalk themselves, Shamrock Rovers. And this is the only way I think the league is ever going to improve going forward as well, is if the teams are qualifying for Europe on a regular stage and you have that kind of money coming in regularly, that can only benefit the league going forward in terms of the type of player, the standard of player we can start to bring into the league, and all of a sudden things start to move on up. So I think it's been absolutely brilliant. I was in the Aviva Thursday night. It was a brilliant occasion. I brought the little fella along. He absolutely loved it, Reggie. He fell in love with football on Thursday night, and it was brilliant. And we're going along on Tuesday now to see them against Pauk as well. And this Bohemians team have been absolutely brilliant as well. Young team. But Keith Long has done a brilliant job with them. And they've played ever so well in the competition so far. And I'm really looking forward to the game on Tuesday night.
Good morning, Al. Declan here.
Hi, Dec.
So the main story this morning is that Cawley's young fella's a gypsy.
He is, Dec.
Can you confirm or deny that particular rumour?
I can confirm that. He actually said it to me after the match on the way out. He was so in awe of everyone singing and dancing. He couldn't believe it. It was amazing. And when we were coming out of the ground, I said, "Dad, I support Bowes from now on." So I even went and bought him a jersey for Tuesday night, Dec. So he is a Dublin lad, in fairness.
Right, fair enough. But no, it is great, obviously, as you mentioned, the revenue point of view, which is absolutely critical to clubs like Bohemians to be able to invest next season. And the other point you made was quite valid too, about the ability to attract players like St. Pat's, who obviously are not in Europe this season, but please God they will be next year, attracting the Maltese international to their team, and other players coming in from more exotic countries as well to our league. It can only be good.
Yeah, absolutely, Declan, and we have to open our mind to that as well, about players coming in from obviously outside of the league as well. And Dundalk have obviously tried that. Some of them have worked, some of them haven't worked, as we know, but that's the risk you always take. But I just think with the financial reward that's on offer, like, look at the figures that are being bandied about this week, but what Bowes have earned already, Dundalk. As I say, if you were getting that on a regular basis every year, the difference that would make to the clubs. And I think, to be fair as well, Declan, you look at the teams that obviously have played so far. Dundalk, Bohemians the other night, they don't look out of place either with the opposition that they play. So the game that they're playing now, obviously, it's a step up from what they've played in the second round, the games coming up during the week. But I wouldn't be in any fear of playing Vitesse Arnhem or Pauk either. I think Bowes looked very comfortable on that stage. Dundalk have obviously have a lot of experience on the European stage in recent years as well. And of course, Shamrock Rovers, who we mentioned last night beating St. Pat's, are just hitting their stride as well. So they'll be very confident to going through. They're playing an Albanian team next Thursday night, Tueta. So out of the three of them, I think Shamrock Rovers have the best chance of coming through. And wouldn't it be great to see one of our teams in the inaugural kind of group stage of the Conference League? It'd be absolutely fantastic.
You fancy them then, Bowes, in the next...
game?
Yeah, Bowes are playing really well, Reggie. As I did mention, of course, it's a step up. Kagawa, who used to play for United, is obviously playing for Pauk as well, so people will watch out for him. But as I said, they've been in 8 of the last 11 group stages, so it'll be a stiff competition. But that's what you expect at this stage as well. We're in the third round now, and the teams want to be tested. I do fancy them. I think out of the three teams, Shamrock Rovers probably have the best chance of going through because of the opposition they play and the fact that they've dropped down from the Champions League route, Reggie. They got a bye in the second round, so they're the favourable opponents in the third round. So they have the best chance, and they are hitting form, to be fair, as well, the Shamrock Rovers.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, we look forward to that one, Alan. No doubt, like you said, you're going to be there anyway, so I'll get to see a few more of those great tweets you sent out of the young lad.
We've a great week ahead with the teams, and we wish them all, Reggie. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I'll chat to you again next week. You take care of yourself. That's Alan Cawley there. Of course, Cawley's Call fame, whose son has now been converted to a Bowes fan. So there'll be plenty of listeners delighted to hear that as well. And we wish Bowes the very best in that upcoming game as well against Pauk. But that's all we've got time for this week on the show. Another packed show that's gone so quickly. Thank you to all of our listeners for listening to us here on Dublin Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8, with thanks to Insure My Van. Thanks also to our producer, Jane McNamara, and also like to thank all of our guests who joined us on the show today and indeed in studio. As I say, thank you to Declan Drake sitting opposite me. We'll be back again next week. Take care, stay safe, and have a great week.